Dear God, may the words of my mouth and the meditations of all our hearts be acceptable in your sight, O God, our strength and our Redeemer. Amen. All approaching underground or subway trains in England are announced over the loudspeaker with the warning, "Mind the gap." That space, that gap between where you are and where you are going is fraught with portent and possibility and is actually a key part in Mark's telling of John the Baptist's violent and gory death. This is the only story in Mark's gospel where neither Jesus nor a disciple is the protagonist. And though Mark's gospel itself is clearly the shortest, this account of John's arrest, imprisonment, and death is the longest in the entire New Testament. The story of John's death, excuse me, I'm not sure why I'm making so much noise. The story of John's death has as its background lust, sex, adultery, and betrayal. And you thought it was just a bloodletting decapitation. According to Jewish historian Josephus, when Herod Antipas was on his way to Rome with his brother Philip and Philip's wife Herodias, Herod and Herodias began an affair. It was hot and steamy enough for Herod to dash home, divorce his own wife, and pirate Herodias away from her husband, his brother. They married, and John the Baptist arrived on the scene, wagging his finger, condemning Herod, and stating clearly that what he had done was immoral and against the law. Oddly enough, as we just heard, Herod liked John, or perhaps feared or respected him. He seems to have felt about the Baptist the way Pilate felt about Jesus. We are told that Herod protected John, that he was perplexed by him, but that he liked to listen to him. All the more reason for his wife Herodias to despise John. If John, who was condemning their union, was gathering ground with Herod, she must have felt increasingly threatened. Herod then has a birthday party, and Herodias' teenage daughter dances for the guests, greatly pleasing all in attendance. And so delighted is Herod, and no doubt so inebriated, that in a flush of drunken exuberance, he asks her to name a wish, and it shall be yours, even half the kingdom. Taken by surprise, she apparently draws a blank. Perhaps all she could think of was a new horse or another servant, nothing grand enough to take full opportunity. So she runs to her mother, Herodias, who, seizing the moment, instructs her to go to the king and ask for John the Baptizer's head on a platter. The young girl returns to the merriment, makes the chilling request, and we are told that the king was deeply grieved. And that's the moment I want to look at. That instant where Herod is thrown for a loop, host of a raucous throng in the midst of great jocularity and singing and dancing, a delicious repast and ever-flowing wine, Herod is stunned to silence. Admittedly, the next sentence says that he acted out of respect for his promise to her and his guest, and he dispensed the henchmen forthwith. But there is a sliver, a tiny gap of time or space between his shock and horror and grief and his subsequent action that is very important. It could have been a greater gap, a bigger space. He could have said, "Hang on, are you serious? I need to think about this." But he didn't. He rushed in to fill that irksome, frightening, ungrounded gap with decisive action. If you're like me, you do this too. We're allergic to discomfort, confusion, dilemmas, pain, and that feeling of groundlessness. When we are thrown off guard by tragedy, bad news, or simply an awkward situation, our inclination is to figure out what we should do very quickly. So we rush in to fill the space, the gap, with some action, something, someone. And this is entirely natural. Who wants to feel hurt? Our first reaction to pain is to seek comfort, to make the pain go away. What, we ask ourselves, can I do to make myself feel better? What if we didn't act as though our lives depended on not feeling pain or being hurt? What if instead of pulling away from what makes us uncomfortable, we considered it? We gave it space. We allowed what was simply to be. In Psalm 46, which we just heard, God said, "Be still and know that I am God." It's easy to sit quietly of a summer morning sipping your coffee on the porch and listening to the cardinal herald in the day. Our fullness and appreciation of God's presence and glory and majesty rest on the tip of our tongues at such times. But it's a different matter entirely when we have been hurt or are frightened. In her wonderful book, When Things Fall Apart, Pema Chodron, a Buddhist nun, says that her teacher, Shogangra Torunga Rinpoche, described this as leaning in to the sharp points. This is not our natural inclination. Human beings, of course, are not the only animals who react from a threat. Look around you, and you'll see that the natural world is engaged in a massive flight response, except, of course, for those creatures who have chosen to fight instead and are avidly seeking to deliver their enemy's head on a platter. What Pema Chodron suggests is that before we rush in to fill those moments when we are thrown off guard, before we desperately seek to grab onto something or someone for balance, that we stop and observe what's going on. This isn't what we want to do. When the rug's been pulled out from under us and we're dizzy with vertigo, what we want most of all is to feel grounded and secure. We reach for our cell phones, or something to eat, or drink, or go shopping, or go for a walk, or a run, or plan an activity, or climb a mountain, or turn into our favorite TV series, all of which are good activities in their own time. But if we overdo them as a way to avoid what hurts, we do ourselves a great disservice. Who named the store the gap, anyway? It seems a perfect metaphor for our discomfort. When in doubt, go shopping or fill the gap with stuff you don't need. The uncomfortable moments don't only occur when catastrophe strikes, of course. We get restless and ill at ease more than we think. For whatever reason, many people seem to be filling their lives to overflowing. They have so much to care for, so many commitments and obligations and expectations that they rarely get a moment to be still. And perhaps that's the point. It's what Chodron calls entertainment mentality. Until we recognize how quickly we rush to fill the gaps, we will never get in touch with what we are actually frightened of. Chodron calls this intentional pausing, refraining. And it's when we choose not to act compulsively to get away from uncomfortable feelings. It's when we don't fill the space with our addictions, our actions, our attempts to avoid feeling what's wrong. This is how she describes it. Refraining is one of those uptight words that sound repressive. Surely alive, juicy, interesting people would not be practicing refraining. Maybe they would sometimes refrain, but not as a lifestyle. It's the quality of not grabbing for entertainment the minute we feel a slight edge of boredom coming on. It's the practice of not immediately filling up space just because there's a gap. Years ago, I was introduced to an interesting meditation practice. We were told just to notice what our physical movements were when we felt uncomfortable. I began to notice that when I felt uncomfortable, I did things like pull on my hair, or scratch my nose or head when it didn't itch, or straighten my collar. I made little jumpy, jittery movements when I felt I was losing ground. Our instruction was not to try and change anything, nor to criticize ourselves for what we were doing, but just to see what we did. Noticing how we try to avoid the uncomfortable feelings, the gaps, the spaces we dash to fill is a way to get in touch with groundlessness. Refraining, not habitually acting out impulsively, has something to do with giving up entertainment mentality. Through refraining, we see that there's something between the arising of a craving or aggression, or loneliness, or whatever it might be, and whatever action we might take as a result. There is something in us we don't want to experience, and we don't want to be there, because we are quick to act. Refraining is the method for getting to know the nature of this restlessness and fear. The only way I know to calm the jitters is to pray. Because ultimately, there's little that I can do to make myself feel better, try as I may. Only God can calm us down. And God knows that when you get lost or frightened, you need a friend. The good news is that when we try to refrain from our compulsive actions, from whatever we do to avoid pain or loneliness or unease, we are never alone. Jesus is beside us. Sitting in the gap, in the space of apparent nothingness, on the cliff above the mountain of despair. Funny thing about Jesus, though, he doesn't intrude or force himself into situations the way we might. He is often quiet, so quiet that we might miss seeing him or run over him or swat him away like a nasty mosquito. The trick is that until we stop acting out our own solutions, we won't see him or feel him or hear him or smell him, however it is that we might suddenly be aware of his presence. I'm pretty quick to fill up space myself. I like to tell myself that it's because I'm inclined towards over-enthusiasm. My personal greatest challenge is self-censure. Controlling my desire to do more. When our daughter Jane was a senior in high school and soloing one Sunday afternoon at the Flynn with the Vermont Youth Orchestra, and we were having a dinner reception at our house after the concert for 40 people, and I was preaching that morning and doing the flowers for the concert hall, my mother came for the weekend. Eating toast and sipping her coffee that morning, she watched me making a large flower arrangement that I would quickly pick up after church and deliver to the Flynn. I was scurrying around trying to get the house ready for the reception before I left for church, and she looked at me and she said, "You work too hard." "I don't usually," I snapped quickly and defensively, "but yes, today I'm working too hard." "No," she said, "you work too hard all the time. It's a tick." And she was right, of course, as she was most of the time. Sometimes I just can't help myself. I rush in and act where I would be better advised to stop and pause. I speak when silence would be more appropriate. I insert myself into situations, spaces, and gaps, oddly enough, because they make me uncomfortable. My guess is that I am not alone. One of the striking things I noticed in the movie RGB about Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg is the way she answers questions. At first, it seems as though she's actually not going to, or hasn't heard the question. Throughout the movie, I admired the restraint of those interviewing her. They didn't repeat the question and rush in to fill the silence, the gap. And neither did she. Oh, my land, imagine she thinks before she speaks. One of the most brilliant, intelligent, honorable people in the country takes her time, pauses in the gap, minds the gap before responding. In the past 6 weeks, many of us have been possessed by the unbearable image of children being separated from their parents at our borders. As one astute member of this congregation noted, it's important that we not refer to this as what's going on, because people are doing this. She's right, of course. We mustn't dehumanize atrocities in any way by thinking of them as situations. They are brought about by the mandates and actions of human beings, which got me thinking of the border guards who actually separated the children from their mothers, who grasped the children and ripped them from their protesting and screaming and crying parents who were physically restrained. What was it like for those guards? I am certain that there was a moment, there was a gap, there was a pause when, like Herod, they felt for a moment deeply grieved. But for whatever reason, fear of retribution, for not following orders, loyalty to superiors, anger, they didn't mind the gap, that place where Jesus dwells. They obliterated it, crushed it with power, just as Jesus himself was crushed, obliterated, and crucified by the powerful Roman authorities who feared and were threatened by him, immigrant and stranger that he was. And the way, incidentally, John the Baptist before him was likewise murdered. Mind the gap. That holy space and time when your nerves tingle, when your stomach sees, when your mind rushes and your heart gallops. Resist, refrain from blurting out some iniquity, inanity, something hurtful, acting impulsively, lashing out, picking up your cell phone, self-medicating, because you know who is resting in that gap. Your God, however you imagine that power, entity, divine spirit, it fills and holds your troubled heart right then and there. And when we rush to close the gap, ignore it, crush it, it is the God within us that we behead and offer up upon a platter. We do this individually and collectively, as single souls, as civil institutions, businesses, churches, and nations. The call this day is to be still and mind the gap. Be still and know that I am God. Grace and peace. And our closing hymn now is number 518, Turn Back.